today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead here again to have another conversation with you about some of the stories that matter. Folks, we are delighted to be with you today to have an opportunity to talk through some of the issues that are happening both in this country and around this city. One of the things I think is interesting, as we pause for just a moment, to recognize that yesterday we should have stood still. Yesterday, no matter where you were, you should have stopped for a moment. Yesterday should have been a day of reflection for you. It should have been a day where you stopped and you thought about the fact that Dr. King was assassinated 53 years ago yesterday. Dr. King, who was only 39 years old, who has been gone longer than he was with us. Dr. King, whose very actions, whose very life, Dr. King, whose words transformed our nation. Yesterday was a day when we realized that we live in a country that is willing to kill the dreamer with the hope of killing the dream. We understand, and we talk about this, I'm sure, in our own lives. We talk about Dr. King and the dream that he had around freedom, the dream that he had around justice, the dream that Dr. King had that this country would be better tomorrow than it was yesterday. This country will be better going forward than it was going backwards. This country would be better as we all begin to recognize who it is we want to be. So no matter what you did yesterday, my hope is that you stop just for a moment to recognize the memory, the contribution, the life of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. I thought a lot about it. I always try to take some time on Dr. King's day to think about him and to think about who I am in this country and who I want to be. I think Dr. King calls upon us to do more, to be more active, to be more involved. We are at a point now where the nation is opening back up. Every step of the way, every single day, more is opening in this country. And what we recognize is that some of the things that we thought were no longer a part of this country are coming back now that we're opening back up. Things that we didn't want to deal with, things we didn't want to talk about, they are coming back. And I want to talk through some of them today. Exactly what is coming back now that we're open? Traffic accidents are coming back. They're saying that there are more car accidents now, of course, than over the last year when nobody was on the streets. People are anxious to get back. They're driving much faster. They seem to be more distracted. So car accidents are back. Carjackings are back. There was something that we didn't think much about because everybody was in the house. Well, now that we're back out, carjackings are back up. Crowded spaces is another thing. It is back. No matter where you went this weekend, I'm sure you went and did something that may have either been related to Easter, if that is what you follow, if you follow Resurrection Day, or you just went out because the weather was so beautiful. It was crowded everywhere. Additionally, what we're seeing is homicide numbers are back up. If I'm not mistaken, this weekend, last night, Justina, 5 people were shot last night. Homicides are back up because we're back in the streets here. The other thing that I'm thinking about is that we have spent some time in this country focused on the hashtag MeToo movement and trying to deal with sexual harassment and sexual assault. But we put a pause and we put a pin. Everybody was home and we didn't really think about it. Well, it seems like that's going to be something we're going to have to get right with. We're going to have to talk about sexual assault and sexual harassment. We're going to have to talk about environments where young women and more mature women don't feel safe. We got to talk about what we're willing to do as we get ready to send our children back to school are we making sure that they are okay? I want to spend some time talking about that in the first hour. And then in the second hour, the MLB has pulled out of Atlanta. Is that correct, Justina? They're going to lose about $100 million in Atlanta. Atlanta that we've always called, you know, kind of Blackopoly, right? Atlanta's Blacklanta. I mean, Atlanta is the place, Chocolate City. MLB pulled out because of this increased focus on voter suppression. That includes a call to boycott Delta, for example. What are you willing to do to make sure we don't lose our rights around voting? So we have a lot to talk about in the second hour. We'll also get a quick update on the Anton Black case. I want to hear more about that, and we'll explain more about that in the second hour. But first, I want to turn our attention to the story that came out today. It came out in the Baltimore Brew. And I've been looking into this for the last couple of days because there was an Instagram account about this. Students at a Baltimore City school share stories of sexual harassment and assault. I want to urge you to go and read the story for yourself. We are not going to name the school, nor are we going to name anyone who has been accused. Instead, we just want to talk to the young women who felt it was important, it was prudent, that they were not, since they were not being heard, they created an Instagram account, and I'm going to talk to the young woman who created the Instagram account, and it's Survivors of the School. And you can go and look it up, look up Baltimore City Schools, get the new Instagram account about sexual harassment and sexual assault. If you take a look at it, it has over 800 followers, and the posts there are mostly anonymous, but they are strikingly similar, to use the word of the reporter Fern. Here's one. Grab me by my hair and pushed my head down toward his lap as a joke. Being pinned to the wall of the school stairwell, he started to put my hand down near his private area, but I pushed him away. Sitting next to me and out of nowhere, someone grabbed my thigh. Stories of sexual harassment, stories of rape that were primarily said to have taken place off campus. Several of the survivors said they were belittled or blamed for dressing too provocatively. I was told that next time I should wear something a little more appropriate to avoid this happening, one person said, describing an administrator's reaction after a male classmate mocked her for wearing leggings and then slapped her bottom. Many were hurt and angered to discover their harasser received little to no punishment and went on to victimize others. After reporting their harassment, several students said they were subjected to even more abuse as retaliation. They said they have reached out to the school and they have documentation to show that, and that they felt that nobody was listening to them. And so I have the actual founder of the Instagram account. She's a junior at the school, created the account on March 23rd. And then when it became too large, very quickly, another student, another junior, stepped in to help her administrator. So far, 865 people have followed the page and 156 people have posted about this school. The school's director sent out a March 25th email expressing surprise and contrition, but here's the deal. The young women who are sharing their story, again, you can go right onto Instagram, type in Baltimore City Survivors, you can go to Baltimore Brew and read the story there, are saying they were not being heard and that they are raising the flag because they're in pain and they are calling out. And they're not getting the assistance that they feel that they need. So I want to talk to the first young lady, Miss DeWitt, who created the Instagram account. How are you?
Hi, I'm good.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, it's no problem.
And I know that we're also joined by Miss Lane Ryer.
Yeah. Hi.
Hi, how are you? And so I am purposely
good,
just to let you know, folks, because these are minors and their parents have given permission for them, we're not created the Instagram account and why you felt it was necessary to draw this type of attention to what is going on.
It's kind of been like an accepted fact at our school that whenever girls would be sexually harassed or assaulted, the administration would just kind of sweep it under the rug. And recently, in March for Women's History Month, a few students came forward with stories of their own and how the administration mishandled the cases. And I just thought enough was enough. And I created the page to start to give a platform to all the stories and have more people feel comfortable sharing with, like, anonymity and stuff, you know.
So now, when you put the story out there, because we know that Instagram is a place that a lot of young people tend to go to be able to speak freely, did you find that the response, the 156 posts that have come up, are they all from current students or from former students? What did you find across the board?
The majority of the stories came from current students and then alumni. And then parents of current students.
And when you reached out to the school, what did you receive from the school? And then I'll come to you, Ms. Lane Ryer. What did the school say? Before you even got to the Instagram account, if I'm understanding this correctly, you went to the school, as did a number of people who were complaining and documenting what was happening to them.
Yeah, so in a lot of the stories that are up on our page, survivors have recounted going to administration and reporting or telling administration about their stories, and nothing has been done. So that's part of the page's purpose, is because the administration wasn't stepping up and wasn't responding to survivors, sometimes in any way, sometimes in a way that made the situation worse.
Well, now I'm wondering, Ms. Lane Ryer, I'll come to you, because my understanding is that the school has been closed. Have you been having in-person classes at your school, and has this been happening since COVID, or are most of these accounts or things that happened prior to COVID?
These accounts are prior to COVID.
Okay.
We've been closed.
Okay, and so is the sense from the school, so would you, reaching out now, you want the school to respond and do something prior to everyone coming back into the building?
Yes. And we've received a few emails from the school, from the director, and from Baltimore City Schools, but none of them have been what we need.
And so I know that there is... in terms of looking for you to take steps, now, we of course, don't expect survivors to lay out their own plan of healing. Like, we understand that. We are not in any way saying that. But I wonder, Ms. DeWitt, what would restoration or restitution, like, what would healing look like in this situation? Because we're talking, you know, 156 people who are former students and current students, many of whom shared on Instagram because they are choosing to remain anonymous, and there's no judgment there. But what is restitution, or what does restoration look like for you?
So we have two demands. The first is that the assistant principal, Mary Evans, be removed from her position because she's the common factor in the majority of these cases. She is the person who continues to dismiss all of these cases. And the second demand is to a zero tolerance policy for sexual assault and harassment, so the perpetrators can face repercussions for their actions and realize that this is wrong.
Okay, so what about healing for the people involved? Because one of the things that we're going to have on the show at 3:30, we will have a social worker on the show. We're going to have a sexual harassment counselor on the show. Is that something, Ms. Lane Ryer, you think that would also help? I mean, I'm thinking of ways to talk through this and get to a place of healing so that, you know, people can come to grips with what happened, but think about how they move forward from here. Not to jump to healing too quickly. I'm just thinking about how we can assist.
Yeah, 100%. In our policy, one thing that we've stated is that we do believe in restorative justice.
Yes.
And we believe in a system that works for the survivors. And these experiences cause a lot of trauma that can last a very long time. and our priority, as well as making sure that abusers know that this is unacceptable, but it's also that we can help survivors heal and be able to feel safe in their school again. So things like counseling and resources for survivors are extremely important to us in this process, which the school has talked about in a few of their emails. And that is pretty much the one thing that they have really been in the same place as us on, is that counseling and help for survivors is extremely important in terms of the healing process.
So for us, and let me just say first, thank you to both of you, particularly to you, Mr. Witt. Thank you for putting up the Instagram page. I think it's important for people to have the space to tell their story. And I think it's brave of you to come forward. I know that in the article that you and, you know, just a few of the students chose not to be anonymous. I definitely believe there's strength in that. And this is why on this show, we wanted to give you an opportunity to tell your story. We chose not to go into the name of the school because, you know, the school is not open today for us to get comments. And we want to give them an opportunity to have a fuller and broader conversation, which we will facilitate here. We just wanted to follow up on this story because it so greatly disturbed us. And we wanted to give a platform because we think it's important. If any person in this city, any person who attends a Baltimore City school feels that they are not safe, there are steps to healing. And this is why we have Erica Alston coming on at 3:30. And she talks about, you know, advocacy for children. We have a sexual a counselor coming on at 3:45 to talk about what we can do. And then we are dedicating some of our show tomorrow to having a sexual assault and harassment counselor on, because we want to be able to provide some assistance. I know that at this point you are still at home. Do you know when you will be going back into the building?
I believe that freshmen are already starting to come back into the building, and the rest of the school have an option to go back in hybrid a few weeks after spring break ends. But I think that's just speculation.
Okay, no problem. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to continue, Mr. Witt and Ms. Rain Lyer, we're going to continue to follow up with you so that we can get the information that we need, so that we can help you in any way that we can. Mr. Witt and Ms. Lane Ryer, as we go forward, is it possible that we can connect you with one of our counselors coming on the show today?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, because we want to make sure when we talk about female students being sexually harassed, groped, bullied, assaulted, and is piled up with alarming speed, we want to lean in as quickly as possible. We will also follow up with Baltimore City Schools and with your school. And as we get more information, we will share it here and we will keep you in the loop, okay?
Okay, thank you. Okay.
Thank you so much, Mr. Witt and Ms. Lane Ryer, two juniors who came forward on Instagram to share their stories of being sexually assaulted, harassed, groped, bullied. And by opening up this space on Instagram, they've had 156 people to share their story about a Baltimore City school and over 800 followers. Thank you for your time. And so, folks, as we go forward, I think it's important for us to think really clearly about how we can be of some assistance. What is it that we can do to create environments where our children are safe? We try as much as possible on this show to provide space to have these conversations, but we have young people in this city who are hurting. And apparently 156 of them who are sharing their stories. There's also, if you go online to the Instagram page, you go to the Baltimore Brew, you can read the story there. It was put up for Women's History Month about what these young women at this particular school, what they are sharing. I'll read you the last thing. This quote here is from Ms. Lane Ryer, who said, "It's an amazing school with some teachers who have been really supportive. It is heartbreaking that there are students who don't feel safe there." There's a culture of punishment and probation and being kicked out of school, and that's not really solving the problem. We will continue to have this conversation. I want to open up to you, 410-319-8888. As we talk about all the things that are now starting to happen as we open back up, I'm wondering what it is that we can do to hold on to some of the things that we had during quarantine, which was another level of safety. Like, a lot of people are saying, let's get our children back in school ASAP. The children need to be back in school. I'm thinking of students where home has been a safer place for them. I'm thinking about sexual assault and harassment. I'm thinking about students who were bullied. I'm thinking about students who felt that their teachers were not advocating for them. Where do they fit in? It's interesting because when, as my son was home, one of the things that he shared with me is that he had a classmate who attended a different school who said, you know, this has been the best time for him. Quarantine was excellent. Why? Because he didn't have to go to school. Didn't have to worry about being bullied, didn't have to deal with the social pressures. There was something about the safety of home. And I'm thinking, if this is how young people are feeling, then we need to talk about how to advocate more so that our children are safe when they're in the kindergarten through 12th grade environment. We'll talk more about that when Erica Austin joins us after the break, as well as Liz Stoner from the Pro Bono Counseling Project. This is Today with Dr. K. Stay with us. Dr. K, I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. I really want to spend some time talking about the trauma that our children are dealing with. This story that I read from the Baltimore Brew just so disturbed me. And I add to that the concerns that a lot of parents are feeling as we're preparing to send our children back into school. It's not as simple as, well, all children need to be back in school and that's it. What about the children that don't feel safe? What about the children who've been dealing with being bullied for years? What about the children who are dealing with sexual assault and sexual harassment? What about those children? Like, let's be clear. And we live in a society that seems to be anti-black and anti-female. Like, so that behavior doesn't just manifest itself in the streets when you're protesting. It also shows up in our schools as well. Our children are going through so much stress. And dare I say, they've been going through stress for years. Being home actually reduced the stress. Let me just say, it did. I have a senior. His stress level went all the way down when he was home. Just the extra stress of having to just show up every day in person. He loved the days when he didn't have to cut his camera on. When he could just show up in his full presence. He was a lot more talkative online. I'm just saying that maybe there are some aspects of this that are connected to healing that we actually need to think about. 410-319-8888. What does healing look like for our children? I'm joined now by Erica Austin, a youth advocate and executive director of Rebound, a trauma-responsive approach to youth wellness and recovery. Erica, how are you?
I am great, Dr. K. I am an honor to be here. Thank you so much.
And I probably should say, and Chauncey's Angels, and master's student. I have a lot I can say. Mom of a senior.
Absolutely.
So I appreciate you coming on and just helping us to think through this. So we shared a little while ago a story of some young women at a Baltimore City school who have come forward through their Instagram page, and they've come forward saying that they have been dealing with sexual assault and harassment for years. And so in thinking about how we respond to trauma for youth wellness and recovery, what would you suggest that we do to set up an environment where our children are safe when they go back into school?
I was really happy to hear that you injected the need for counseling, as it didn't sound like that was a part of their initial plan. So what I believe the IG page gave an anonymous voice where therapy and mental health supports will give recovery a personal level. So it's awesome that they've got that platform to be anonymous and have a place to have this this level of voice, but when we begin to heal and recover from things, that gives us our power back. So I think it's very important that the young women who have been victimized at this school are offered mental health supports, therapy, counseling at the expense of the school, because we then, you know, socioeconomically, that school has a vast array of students, so we want to make certain that kids that don't have medical care have the same access to the same services.
So that's interesting that you said that and just drew a difference between the anonymous platform versus where counseling would kind of center it. Can you talk, Erica, about this whole idea of remaining anonymous? Because a lot of people push back against that, not understanding that sometimes when you've been victimized, the last thing you want is your face and your name plastered everywhere, or you're afraid of retaliation.
Or repercussions. Yeah, absolutely. So I think having an anonymous platform is the gateway to recovery. It allows you to, you know, hide behind, lack of a better word, shield yourself from the possibility of repercussions. So it allows you to speak up, say, this happened to me, without you seeing me, without you knowing who I am, and the gateway to healing. So I've taken this first step in acknowledging that I've been victimized. When they go on that IG and anonymously post, this happened to me in this elevator, this person touched me, this person lifted me up, all of the horrific things that are listed on this IG, when they have this place that they can say that these things happen, because we don't know. What we do know is these young people said these things to administrators.
Right.
They said these things to teachers. They said these things to adults that should have been creating a safe space for them, and it didn't happen. So finally, someone hears me. Baltimore Brew heard them. Baltimore Brew made a story. And for me, I read the Baltimore Brew story, and I forwarded the link to a friend of mine that's on the board for that school with just one word, interesting. And the board member responded, more than interesting, ugly, disgusting, and unacceptable, which let me stick my chest out. Okay, so what I know that nobody else knew is that board members are disgusted.
Yes.
And something will be done. So that gave me, I was like, oh, okay. All I said was interesting. Nope, it's sad, it's sickening, it's disgusting, and unacceptable.
Good. I'm so glad you did that, Erica, because the idea is that, you know, when people step forward to tell their story, particularly minors, right? So, you know, one of the things that, you know, when we talk to the young sisters who told their story, you know, even though they have come forward and they've named themselves in the article, I'm like, you know what, being named in the Brew and coming on the radio, let's just use your last name, just because we want to make sure that not everyone wants to hear your story and not everyone is going to be supportive of your story.
And that they've proven that by having to make the IG page.
Yeah. So how do we protect our girls? Let's start with them. Like, you know, and I know that Sexual assault and harassment also happens to boys, and it happens to children of all genders.
It's killing old stigmas. It's children are seen and not heard. You know, there are people still being victimized by these old stigmas, this old way of living. Children are seen and not heard. They only speak when spoken to. And this generation, like just listening to two juniors and how articulate they were and how intentional they were, how strategic they were, like they've got demands, and how they were able to articulate what they want. What we as old people don't understand is how powerful the young voice is. Gone are the days that they're living like we were forced to. They have a voice and they're not afraid to use it. They created a social media platform. Like, oh, do you see us now? Do you hear us now? And we do. So kudos to them for that. So I think it's us service providers, those of us that advocate for young people, people like you that provide a platform. It is our responsibility to make certain that young people always know that there is a safe space. Like, I heard you mention about going to school versus, you know, in person.
Yes.
In person and staying at home. That's twofold. There are kids that are thriving at home, and there are kids that before school let out, home wasn't a safe space.
Good point.
You know, there are children who only got a meal if they went into the school building. That there are children whose safe adult was in the school building that they don't have access to right now. So I think it's monumental that the safeguards are put in place for the kids that need to be in the building. My daughter, who, you know, I am hands-on helicopter mama, I'm making certain that she has what she needs. She didn't thrive at home. She needed social interaction. However, another thing that we're not talking about is the level of anxiety that these young people have, especially seniors.
Yeah.
They are so competitive that they have to be the best of the best, and not necessarily some unrealistic expectations that us as parents have put on them, but it is the competition between their peers. So the signing days and what social media has done and what schools people are being accepted in and the level of scholarships that they get or don't get, the ability to go to the school that they want to or the inability to not be able to go, that's all mental health. That's all stress. That's all anxiety that we're not looking at as anxiety. So when we talk about trauma, that is grief, loss, and trauma. It is how kids are processing their emotions, good, bad, and indifferent. It is making certain that they have a voice and that they feel safe enough to use it. My daughter was engaged in a youth conference this weekend through a program called Aziza Peace.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the kids are inner city, Prince George's County, inner city Baltimore, and then they're a little sprinkled middle class parents who have our kids there, because regardless of our social and economic or our zip codes, all of our children need the same things. And the most important thing is a safe space, because they need to know that when mom and dad are going through a divorce, that they don't have to take sides. When there is a sibling that is incarcerated and they miss them, mm-hmm. that they can say it. When there's a parent that's incarcerated and they miss them, they can say it, that it's okay to feel. So these are the things that aren't happening on large scales for young people, that spaces need to be created where young people know that, you know, if I go here, if I call this person, if I'm a part of this program, I have a place.
Mm, so glad you said that. I'm so glad you said this. So going forward,
mm-hmm.
as we continue as parents, as counselors, as teachers, trying to lean in to help the students that are in our life, in our homes, in the schools that we're going to attend, what are two or three things that you just want to just kind of drive home, things that you can look for if there is a child that's been traumatized? You know, what should we look for?
I think a way that we can create a place, as simple as I'm a mom of a 17-year-old, you know, who will be leaving for college in the fall, and we've got to have this conversation about sex, right, and birth control. I'm not asking any questions. This is what I say to her: if you think that you're ready, that you think that you may be ready, let me know, and we'll do birth control with no questions asked. Right? That is not, don't do this, don't do that, you wait till you're married. Like, that's a level of stress on kids. Like, it's human, it's hormonal. So I went to my home office one day, and under my keyboard was a letter. And it says, I think I might be ready. My promise was, no questions asked, so I make an appointment, right? And that's what we do. So as teachers, as care providers, as service providers, as human services workers, as people who have relationships with young people, it's our responsibility to create relationships that we're trusted partners. That's a teacher giving 5 minutes out of classroom time, that if anyone has any issues or anyone's missing someone, you lost your grandmom, you know, you want to talk to your brother, you can scribble down a note and leave it in this box.
Right. I like that.
And as state mandated reporters, if we then see that a child is in need of services, we can do it in a way that the parent is involved and it's a trusted relationship versus like calling the people. Because what we also have to understand with grief and loss and trauma in Baltimore City is that there's a very thin line between poverty and neglect. Right, so we've got to look through a different lens, and that lens is every child deserves a safe space. It can't be measured up against our own personal measuring stick. that when we see news coverage of kids carjacking and murdering and being murdered, that our first thought is, what happened to them? Versus, what's wrong with them? And we operate from that place. If we operate from, what happened to that young person? Like, what happened to the young man that groped the girl in the elevator? He was probably a victim himself.
Right.
So we create places where these young people can speak up about what's happening in them, around them, and to them. We are trusted partners versus old people that don't understand. And that's what's happening with this generation. Like, we don't understand, and we think we have all the answers. Clearly, the two juniors that you spoke with had answers. They had their own solutions to their own problems. So it's our responsibility to listen. And when we hear, provide the platform needed to move them through to a healthy place.
Oh, Erica Austin, I really appreciate you. Youth advocate and executive director of Rebound, a trauma-responsive approach to youth wellness and recovery. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for having this conversation.
No. I really appreciate you saying, you know, what you said to, you know, the young person in your life. And when we do something similar with our sons, we call it the kitchen table. Come to the kitchen table. If you got a kitchen table conversation, that means there's no judgment at the kitchen table.
Absolutely.
No judgment.
And
tell us what's going on, because you got to tell somebody.
Yep.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate you.
All right. Anytime. See you soon. Okay. Bye-bye.
And so, folks, I'm joined now by Elizabeth Stoner, and I want to open up the phone lines to you to just kind of respond. We'd love to hear your comments about this as we're working through this story that came out, our concerns around that, and thinking about helping our young people, listen to me, young people who are not only dealing with this in school, but how about what Erica just said? Young people where home is not the safe place, and they need to go to school so they can be safe. Young people where school is not the safe place and the home is, I mean, we got a lot going on. We're putting a lot on our children. Elizabeth Stoner is a licensed clinical social worker and pro bono counseling project warm line specialist. How are you, Elizabeth?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me on today.
I really appreciate you joining us, because we shared a story, as you know, in the first half hour of the show about some students who've come forward about sexual assault and sexual harassment. And it just so concerned us. We just wanted to be able to offer solutions, offer, you know, suggestions to parents, to teachers. And so, you know, we're thinking about quick tips for listeners that might be experiencing sexual assault. You know, let's start here. Can you explain to me the difference between sexual assault and sexual harassment? Why don't we just start with the basics?
Sure. So they both fall under the same umbrella, right? That unwanted sexual attention. But whereas sexual harassment might be limited to something verbal or in writing, sexual assault is typically when there's contact made, unwanted physical contact of some sort, of a sexual nature.
Okay, so that is the difference. When we hear sexual assault, sexual harassment, we want to be clear that people understand what is going on here. So in terms of quick tips for listeners that might be experiencing sexual harassment first, what should they do? Just sexual harassment, then we'll get to assault.
Sure. So I think that sexual harassment, especially for young people, is something that they want to talk to someone about, a trusted adult especially. Sexual harassment is something that many people face, and it's important for them to recognize that that unwanted attention is not their fault. And there are also wonderful organizations that work with sexual harassment in Baltimore, like Holler Back Baltimore. They do really great work around ending harassment and addressing it, including for young people.
Okay, so how about, is it the same kind of solutions when you start talking about assault? Because I know assault is, when someone actually puts their hands on you or more.
Right. That's a great question. So sexual assault, when that occurs, we want to make sure that we're addressing people's safety first and foremost. It's important to acknowledge the majority of assaults are committed by people that we know, and even individuals that are very close to us, and that sexual assault is never the victim's fault. If someone has been sexually assaulted, then if they are considering reporting that for any reason, it is important to go to the hospital as soon as possible. Someone who is thinking about going to the hospital should try to get there without showering, brushing their teeth, and leaving the same clothing on. If you don't go right away, that's okay. A sexual assault forensic exam can be done up to 5 days after an assault has occurred. And those safe exams are free and confidential, and you don't have to contact the police in order to have one. There are also a number of wonderful resources in Baltimore for people who have been the victim of sexual assault, like Turnaround, and they have a 24-hour helpline that can provide guidance. Also, the Rohr Center at University of Maryland, Baltimore, helps Baltimore City residents who are harmed in the city. And after an assault occurs, whether or not you decide to move forward with any sort of legal process, it can be really helpful to talk to someone who you trust and who will support and believe you, whether that's someone who is a family member, a friend, someone from school or church, or a mental health professional. And of course, victims are welcome to call the Pro Bono Counseling Project or the Pro Bono Counseling Project warm line if they need someone to talk to.
Let me ask you what I think is interesting, Ms. Stoner, is that I've been thinking a lot about the hashtag MeToo movement and the focus on that. I've been thinking about shows like Law & Order SVU and, you know, us trying to grapple with this. And I'm just surprised, maybe naive in my thinking, that it's still happening at the high rate that it's happening. I thought sexual assault and harassment in this environment had gone down. So that's not true.
That's not true. And unfortunately, these occurrences, sexual assault, sexual harassment, domestic violence, those are all things that, unfortunately, we see those numbers go up, and in the pandemic in particular, the domestic violence. And I think that it's something very important that even though we're very grateful that a new light has been shined on these issues through things like hashtag MeToo, it is important to recognize that action is important to take to decrease these numbers, and that victims are in need of our support no matter what.
Okay, so I just have a couple of questions for you, and then we'll take a break. So if someone needs a mental health break, I mean, I'm thinking about with your children, with your spouse. I mean, it's such a stressful time. It was stressful when we closed. It's stressful now that we're opening. So what should we be looking for? How do we know when we should intervene?
I think that's a great question. I think it's really important to pay attention to changes from your normal or typical behavior, mood swings, difficulty concentrating, trouble sleeping, maybe even changes in appetite. If you're noticing these sudden changes, it is important to go to your doctor, because our brain is part of our body, and you always want to rule out any underlying physical issues. But then after or while you're waiting to do that, it is also important to reach out to a mental health professional just to check in, to talk to somebody, and to maybe get another opinion about what might be going on. And, of course, our warm line can be reached at 443-608-9182. And the Pro Bono Counseling Project main line for people who are interested in getting connected to ongoing therapy, that number is 410-825-1001.
Good. And folks, we do have those numbers. So if you call us, we definitely have them here. So my last question for you, because so much is opening up, right? And I know that I have quite a few young people who I'm in touch with who are actually feeling a lot of anxiety about schools and spaces opening up, because, you know, they've changed. I mean, that's a big thing. I've gotten heavy. I've gotten this. I've gotten that. I'm safe at home. I mean, I'm hiding at home in so many ways. So how do we help young people, or really anybody in our life who is not feeling comfortable about the different adjustment we have to make, where we have to now go back out into a world that doesn't feel safe?
It's really important that parents or adults are supportive of children or teenagers and are willing to listen to their concerns and are also honest with them in their response. And obviously you want to be age appropriate with children, but it is important to give children and teenagers honest answers about safety, whether that be in regard to the pandemic or other types of trauma. And if you don't know the answer to give your kids, it's okay to say, I'm not sure, and then go try to speak out that information. And that lets them know it's okay that you don't have all the answers. And I think that in addition to making sure that you're being honest with your children or your teens, that you're also talking to them about ways that they can be safe, whether that is knowing that they can confide in certain trusted adults about some situations, or just in regards to the pandemic, knowing that they can wear a mask and wash their hands. Having those honest conversations is really crucial.
And then my last question for you, and I know that I've said this before, but it just came up. Someone just texted me, and then just talking about, you know, going back into the world and trying to be safe with that. Quite a few people have found that their relationships have not survived the COVID shut-in. No matter how long you were married or together, you're finding being together 24/7 was very difficult. And so someone just texted me and just wanted to see how do we help any person, any adult person whose life as a result of the shutdown is completely changed, whether they lost their spouse, lost a parent, or their marriage or relationship has ended, lost a child or a job.
Yeah, there is a layer of trauma that the pandemic added to what people have been experiencing or did experience during the pandemic. And I think that being gentle with the people in our lives is really important, but also making sure you let them know that it's okay to reach out for help, and that things like grief take time. It's a major adjustment for everyone to, as you were saying, to, you know, we lock down and we open back up. And that patience that we can have with people and letting them know that we can be a friendly ear, or that we can get them help or assist them in getting resources, is really important and really crucial to assisting people with their mental health.
Thank you so much, Elizabeth Stoner, licensed clinical social worker and pro bono counseling project warm line specialist. Phone numbers to call folks for help, 443-608-9182. You can also call 410-825-1001. Thank you so much, Elizabeth.
Thank you.
So, folks, I just want to open up for conversation. There's something that we really have to wrestle with. And I know that it's a hard conversation to have that goes even much bigger and much broader than just one school and one incident. We've got to talk about sexual assault and sexual harassment. We do. We have to talk about it. We have to stop assuming that it's not happening. We live in a culture where sexual violence has been normalized, and we're not calling it. In fact, it seems like you assault women and you get rewarded for it, Donald Trump. You get rewarded with the Supreme Court. You get rewarded with becoming governor. You get rewarded for abusing and harassing and assaulting women in this country. We have Carlisle on the phone. Carlisle, how are you?
I am wonderful. And while I appreciate Dr. Stoner's advice, if we don't put this in a larger context of white supremacy, that we are black people are the main victims. That means we're going to be most traumatized by unemployment, underemployment, firing, all those aspects. If we have a culture, we have a culture where we as enslaved individuals, as children, would emulate the behaviors of the masters. And we have to get to realize that it is a deep, serious problem. And I think it starts in the family. We have to, in the family, raise our children, males and females, that this is not appropriate behavior. And we have to also realize that the abuse that is in the family is what happens in these schools. I mean, they really need to have an auditorium session. All those kids, they don't need to wait. They need to have all those kids in the auditorium and begin to identify those children who are being abused.
Yeah.
They need to identify at home and identify those children who are being abused in the school. They need to have some intervention, some therapy for all of those kids, because we, especially in terms of this COVID, we are being decimated. Yes. We really are being under attack and traumatized on a daily basis. We understand what happened to Michelle Obama, the negative trauma that she received, the death threats that Obama received. You know, the culture is worse. But if you don't put it in the larger context, I think you're really missing the point.
All right. Thank you so much, Carlisle. Hey, folks, we're going to continue to follow up on this story tomorrow. We're actually going to have a sexual assault and harassment counselor on the air. We're going to follow up. We're going to do our part to not turn a blind eye. The only way will we end any kind of abuse in our community is to not look away. We're not going to look away here. Today with Dr. K. Stay with us for more conversation after the break.